We're going to look at Scripture together, and you'll remember that we've been thinking about new things in the last few weeks, and this week we're looking at a new opportunity, and it's taken from Luke chapter 7, verses 1 to 10. When Jesus had finished saying all this in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. There a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him, "This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. And that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. And as I said in my all-age sort of spot a little bit earlier, I think this is a really unusual situation, or an unusual person, certainly for the Jewish people, to find that God, or Jesus, was commending this man who's a soldier, a man whose job was to keep the peace, but actually, if you stepped out of line, you could be brutally treated. We're going to look at that in a moment or two. An unlikely man of faith. So we start, as we look at this scripture, we start by recognizing it's an urgent request. An urgent request is made of Jesus. This often happens, doesn't it? Jesus is going somewhere, doing something, and actually someone comes and says, "We need you. We need you now." And this is another one of those situations where somebody comes and demands some time from Jesus. And we read that a centurion's, now I've changed the word, I don't quite know why we always use the word servant. This person wasn't a servant. He wasn't paid a good wage. He wasn't sort of like, able to go home to his family later. Although he might have had family within the household. This man was a slave. He was a slave. And in that sense, he had no human rights. He was actually a possession of his master. The only value this slave would have had was any particular gifts or skills that he had. So if you were particularly, if you were very good as a musician, you might be worth a bit more. But actually, your only worth was in what you could do or offer to this master or to whoever you might be sold to. So this man had no human rights in that sense. He was not valued as a full human being in this society. And we find actually that Rome could never have functioned as an empire without the slaves. There were vast numbers of slaves in the Roman Empire. And so therefore the might of the Roman Empire in many ways was built upon slave labor and slaves working to sustain the empire. And Rome was a was a brutal occupying force in not just Judea and Palestine, not just in that area, actually across most of the known world. Rome was in charge at this time of the life of Jesus. And Rome was a brutal occupying force. They would put down any opposition in a really ruthless way. They brought about, or rather they enforced, what was called Pax Romana. In other words, that's Latin for Roman peace. But Roman peace came at a price. And it was enforced, as I say, by the compliance often of the ruling group. So there were the high priests and the high priest families within the Jewish situation. But that wasn't enough to keep everybody in line. And so what would sometimes happen is that you would have a ruler who would comply with the Roman authorities. And that's what Herod was. Herod the Great and his sons who followed him later, they were a group of, they were actually part Jewish and part Idumean, or in the Old Testament Edom. He was part Jewish and part from the Edomite tribe. And they were put in place, he was put in place, because he promised, if you make me king, I will make sure the people don't revolt. I'll make sure that this becomes a part of the Roman Empire. And but as so often with empires are paranoid about rebellion, about people turning against their rulers and overthrowing them. And don't we see that in our modern world today as well? We hear about it in new places. The most recent one I've heard about now, I think, is Lebanon, isn't it? Where there's a lot of turmoil and trouble, and potentially we could find that there's a push towards an overthrow of the government there. But in so many places, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in place after place after place, in South America as well, and even in some Western countries, we've had noises towards rebelling against the ruling powers. So you've got all of this might of Rome bearing down on the people. But interestingly, genuine goodwill and respect could still develop even in a situation like this. Imagine, with all of that power of Rome that was dominating and occupying the Jewish nations, still this Roman centurion could command the love and the allegiance of these Jewish leaders, these Jewish elders rather, to be able to come to Jesus and speak to him and ask him for help with his slave who was dying. Humanity and compassion could break out between oppressor and oppressed, and even between slave and master. There must have been a very close, well, it says, doesn't it, a close relationship between this slave and his master. So human compassion could overcome even these vast differences in power in relationships. So we have this urgent request that was made. This centurion slave, whom his master valued highly, was about to die. The centurion, we're told in verse 3, the centurion sent some elders of the Jews to him, to Jesus, asking him to come and heal his servant. That's how these Jewish elders, now they were Jewish elders, not Jewish leaders, so they weren't priests or teachers of the law. These were more senior Jewish men from the local community around Capernaum. So they were respected men who came and spoke and on behalf of this Roman soldier. They were respected, influential men speaking on behalf of this Roman soldier. And they pleaded earnestly and said, "This man deserves to have you do this." Now, some rich Romans would perform what you call philanthropic, generous acts in rebuilding something within the local town where they lived. And they'd do it for political reasons, because it was expedient, or because it was going to get them favour. They were going to curry favour with the local people. "See how generous we Romans are. Haven't we rebuilt your library? Or haven't we rebuilt such and such for you? Look how generous we are. That's why you should allow us to continue to rule you." But it's clear from the sincerity of the comments of these Jewish elders that this man really cared about the community where he served as a military officer. So we've got this urgent request that comes. And then we have, as Jesus responds to it, we have a surprising interruption. Jesus goes with the men, follows them, towards the house of this centurion. And then some friends of the centurion, some separate friends, we guess they might have been actually Romans locally. So the Jewish elders have come and asked him to come, and then these friends come and meet them on the way and say, now they say it on behalf of the Roman centurion, and they say on his behalf, "I do not deserve to have you come under my roof." His friends were quoting his words here. Now, this Jewish centurion might have said that because he was aware that most Jewish rabbis would never enter the home of a Gentile. To do so would have been to make themselves ritually unclean. But Jesus wasn't that sort of rabbi. He wasn't a rabbi who believed that he was made dirty by entering the home, or even somebody who would be regarded as sinful. This rabbi believed that sitting and eating with prostitutes and with tax collectors and with other people who didn't fulfill all the law didn't make him unclean, didn't dirty his righteousness in that sense. Rather, his righteousness was upon him wherever he was. However difficult a situation, however dirty or sinful the people he was amongst, actually what he did was he came in and his righteous presence touched those around them and gave them a desire to be clean, a desire to be renewed, a desire to be forgiven. But perhaps this Roman centurion didn't realize that about Jesus and thought, like other rabbis, "He would never enter my home." But it does seem as though this comment suggests that actually this was a genuinely humble man. There was this comment as well from, once again, the friend saying it on behalf of the Roman centurion. "Say the word and my slave will be healed. Say the word and he'll be healed." You see, somehow or other, this Roman centurion has discerned, has recognized that Jesus has a spiritual authority over the powers that were causing his slave to be so sick that he was about to die. Somehow or other, this Roman centurion just had a sort of sense of a discernment. This man is special, is different. And he goes on to make this really interesting statement as well. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. Just as this soldier knows that he can give an order and it'll be carried out, even when he's not there, he knows that if he gives an order, he can go away and he can have full confidence that order will be followed through. He sees a similar authority in Jesus, who is able to act remotely. In other words, he believes, Jesus, if you just say it, just like when I give an order, I know I can leave it and it'll be done. Jesus, I believe you have a spiritual authority that if you say, my servant will be healed, it'll happen. It'll happen. I think this also illustrates another way of illustrating this soldier, this centurion's humility. He didn't say, I have authority over others. He didn't just say that. He said, I have authority over others, but also, I myself am under authority. He could have simply said, look, I'm the one with power here. But he didn't. He said, I'm under authority and I have authority over others. And then we have this amazed declaration from Jesus. This amazed declaration. In verse 9, when Jesus heard this, he was amazed. There's only two occasions in the New Testament when we hear of Jesus being described as amazed. The other one was in Mark chapter 6, verse 6, and there Jesus was amazed because of the unbelief, not the belief, the faith, the unbelief of the mainly Jewish people of Nazareth. He was amazed at their lack of faith. Here, Jesus is amazed because of the great faith of a Roman soldier. And Jesus says, I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. Now, this wasn't meant as a put-down to the Jewish people. Jesus is actually saying, I did find some faith amongst the Jewish people, but just not as much faith as this man here shows, this extraordinary faith, that he believes that even without seeing his slave, I can bring healing to him. And I want us to recognize that faith can be found in unlikely places and in unlikely people if we have the eyes to see it. If we have the eyes to see it. We need the eyes of faith or spiritually attuned eyes to see such things. It's also worth saying that despite the centurion's words in verse 7, he says through his friends, Lord, just say the word and my servant will be healed. It's interesting, there's no indication that Jesus did say any particular words. There's no indication here in this passage that Jesus did say, your servant, your slave, is now healed. He didn't say it. Now, he does say it in the Matthew reading, Matthew's account of the same story. But I think there's an important point here that's being made. As Christians, we sometimes get quite hung up about whether we've heard the right words. Someone wants to become a believer. Have I heard them say the sinner's prayer? You know, Jesus knows our hearts. Jesus knows what's going on the inside. And words can be important sometimes, but actually what's going on inside, God knows. And like this centurion here, sometimes we have to trust and have faith that God knows what's going on the inside, rather than us having heard the particular words that we want to hear to assure us of what's going on. God knows the heart and motivation of each person. I want to finish by telling you a story about a famous tightrope walker who was called Charles Blondin. And he became famous in the summer of 1859. And he walked over a quarter of a mile along a steel cable that was 160 feet above the Niagara Falls. And he went backwards and forth several times between Canada and the United States. And huge crowds gathered on both sides of the United States side and the Canadian side, and they were filled with shock and awe as they looked at the amazing courage of this man. And actually, over the next few weeks, he crossed over in a sack. He got inside a sack and he walked across that way. He went across on stilts. He went walking backwards. Not moonwalking necessarily, but walking backwards. He went across on a bicycle. He once even carried a stove into the middle of it and balanced the stove and cooked and ate an omelette. On one occasion, he pushed a wheelbarrow across whilst blindfolded. After he'd done this, he said to his audience, "Do you believe I can carry a person across in this wheelbarrow?" And the crowd all raised their arms and they shouted, "We believe, we believe, we believe." Then Blondin asked, "Which one of you will volunteer to get into the wheelbarrow?" Deathly silent. Suddenly, everybody was looking at their shoes. It's interesting that later that year, his friend and manager, a man called Harry Colcord, did ride actually on Blondin's back. I think he also took a woman across in a wheelbarrow, but Harry Colcord did ride on Blondin's back. He sort of like took him across on his back across the falls. So there's a picture of Harry Colcord. I'm wondering whether Harry Colcord's got his eyes shut there or not. I think I would have. Although I wouldn't get there in the first place, to be honest with you. But it was interesting what Charles Blondin said to Harry when they reached the midpoint. Now, you've got to remember, with the winds up on the Niagara Falls, you're talking about a swing of meters on the high wire there. And Blondin said when they got to the middle of the, or when they were getting towards the middle of the tightrope, the most dangerous section, he said, "Harry, you are no longer Colcord. You're no longer yourself. You are Blondin. Until I clear this place, this dangerous part, be a part of me. Mind, body, and soul. If I sway, sway with me. Do not attempt to do any balancing yourself. If you do, we shall both go down to our death." Harry trusted his wiser, more experienced friend. And carefully the great Blondin continued along the tightrope until at last the pair reached the other side, safe and sound. You know, sometimes we have to discover unexpected and unlikely faith in ourselves in order to start seeing it in other people. And I want to say to you, in a moment, I'm going to be handing over to Chris and Dave to come and speak to us, but we need to see all these things in the context of faith within ourselves to see how God can work in new ways and can lead us forward and help us to grow as well as the ministry he calls us to as well. Amen.